Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify's made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, October 7th. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal. President Trump has been sharing memes generated by artificial intelligence on his social media pages, particularly in response to the current government shutdown. He and his team say they're all in good jest. Others don't find them very amusing. Plus, we'll hear about an independent space company looking to challenge industry giants like SpaceX and Blue Origin. But first, President Trump has been increasingly sharing AI-generated meme videos to poke fun at his political opponents or project an image of strength. So what does it mean for the president to be sharing that kind of content? WSJ reporter Amrith Ramkumar joins me now. So Amrith, for people who haven't seen these AI-generated meme videos on Trump's Truth Social or X, could you describe some of them?
AI-generated videos the president has been posting on his Truth Social account, they're intended to be satirical, but they have offended a lot of people, and Democrats have called them racist. The most prominent example shows Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, wearing a sombrero, and him and Chuck Schumer talking in clearly AI-generated voices.
Nobody likes Democrats anymore. We have no voters left because of all of our woke trans bullshit.
Earlier in the year, one that got a lot of attention was a video portraying Trump Gaza with the Gaza Strip sort of reimagined as a Trump-like resort. He even posted one recently where he was throwing a Trump 2028 hat onto Hakeem Jeffries' head inside the Oval Office. But it is also important to note that even Gavin Newsom, the California governor, has been doing this, and he posted one of Mike Johnson, this House Speaker, as a minion, sort of saying that he was one of the president's minions, essentially. And that's why the speaker, Mike Johnson, has told people to not read too much into these AI-generated videos that seem to be designed to poke fun at people.
Just ignore it. I mean, Gavin Newsom was trolling me last night. He painted me like a minion. He painted me yellow with big glasses and overalls. And I thought it was hilarious.
But they definitely can cross lines, and that's where a lot of the debate comes in.
Looking at the strategy behind this, why is the White House taking this approach?
It's important to note a lot of it does seem to be the president using his social media authentically himself. It doesn't seem like this is part of the broad campaign necessarily. In one example, he posted about med beds.
Every American will soon receive their own med bed card.
These beds that are in hospitals that some people think can basically cure all illnesses or injuries and any malady you may have. And those have been promoted by conspiracy theorists. So he posted a fake Fox News segment featuring his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, doing a segment about these beds. And then he later deleted it. And so some of those things people have said can be harmful because people watching them could believe them and think they're true. And that's when you're in a difficult area. In general, though, it does just seem to be an extension of his already rampant social media usage. He sees it as a way to get his message out, poke fun at people, maybe intimidate, maybe share stuff about policy. But that's the thing a lot of people in the tech space have issues with, because the AI-generated videos are getting so good that people can't tell the difference. So if you are talking about substantive policy issues, you could really mislead a lot of people. So it will be fascinating. I mean, the First Lady, Melania Trump, and many lawmakers on the Republican side have been pushing for more guardrails, more protections around so-called deepfake porn. And people are also very worried about using someone's likeness to make money commercially, but it does seem like people should expect to see a lot more of these videos and get good at detecting what's real and what's fake.
That was WSJ reporter Amrith Ramkumar. Coming up, a New Zealand newcomer is getting ready to take on space giants like Elon Musk's SpaceX and Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin. We'll tell you about Rocket Lab after the break. The space launch business is dominated by industry giants with deep pockets like Elon Musk's SpaceX and Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin. Now, a smaller company from New Zealand is hoping to challenge them. Rocket Lab, founded by Peter Beck, is banking on its focus on reusability to propel it among the more well-established rocket launchers. But is it a David among Goliaths, or just chasing a pipe dream? WSJ space business reporter Micah Maidenberg sat down with our colleague Peter Ciampelli for a look at Rocket Lab and the future of space launches.
It's safe to say that everyone listening has heard of Musk and Bezos, but Peter Beck, probably not. Who is he and how did he come onto the scene?
Beck has been kind of space obsessed his entire life, as he tells it. And about 20 years ago, he founded Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab was created in New Zealand, where Beck is from. Since that founding, the company has been on this like startup to kind of growth path. They developed an experimental rocket, and then they raised money and they developed a bigger rocket, still small compared to many. And they've used that rocket to sort of build a launch business, and they started a satellite business that has also grown. Beck has tried to infuse Rocket Lab with his kind of sensibility and desire for both form and function, if you will. In the space industry, the margins on everything working are really thin, so you really have to build functional products. But I was talking to Beck, and he's like, well, we want things to be beautiful too, because something that looks good is also a sign of quality, and that it'll work.
So how did a newcomer to such a high-cost industry get started?
One of the really unique things about the Rocket Lab story, in a way, is, of course, that it emerged out of New Zealand. They still have a lot of facilities there, a big workforce. They also have a lot of folks in the U.S. now because a lot of their business is here. But after Beck started the company, he did what startup founders and entrepreneurs do, which is go knocking on proverbial doors to try to convince investors and others to support what he's doing. And he was able to convince enough folks to fund, for example, like getting Electron, which is their current operational rocket, out to the launch pad and to start launching it. But for many years, for many decades even, the centers of space power in the world have been the United States, Russia, former Soviet Union, China. You know, New Zealand was not super well known for its space activity, and Rocket Lab is now a publicly traded company. That's one difference between some of the other space companies that are out there. And they are not profitable yet. They're growing their revenues, but they're spending a lot of money on their programs. Right now, a big one, of course, is Neutron, this forthcoming rocket that they're hoping to get to the pad soon.
Rocket Lab and SpaceX have already faced off over small satellite launches. What is that small launch market that these two companies are competing in? And how do Rocket Lab and SpaceX compare?
Just a little background. The launch market is generally segmented by vehicle size and power. You have smaller vehicles that can do smaller launches, medium-sized vehicles that can go a little bit further and do a little bit more. And then the big ones, the big massive rockets that are designed to lift huge amounts of stuff off of Earth and in some cases send them very far away. So Rocket Lab, they have one operational rocket right now. It's called Electron, and it does small satellite launches. SpaceX uses its Falcon 9 rocket, which is much bigger than Electron, to also compete in the small launch market. What SpaceX does is basically offer, you know, at least a couple times a year, the ability for companies and academics and other people that want to get like a pretty small satellite into orbit, the chance to split costs and space on one Falcon 9 rocket. Whereas Electron, the Rocket Lab rocket, you basically got to buy the whole rocket. So SpaceX, for most customers, it's cheaper. What Rocket Lab executives say sometimes is, look, SpaceX may be cheaper in the small launch market, but we can get you to where you want to go, when you want to go. One Rocket Lab executive compared it to waiting for a city bus. That would be the SpaceX shared mission versus Rocket Lab and Electron, which is sort of the Uber, more costly, but more flexible.
So Rocket Lab's next product on the horizon is Neutron, which you mentioned earlier. It'll compete directly with Falcon 9, SpaceX's busiest reusable rocket. What can you tell us about Neutron?
So Neutron, it's a bigger rocket for Rocket Lab. It would be their biggest, most powerful, and most complicated to date. Here's why I say most complicated. What Rocket Lab is trying to do with Neutron is to get that partial reusability that SpaceX has already demonstrated with Falcon 9. The whole rocket isn't reusable, but the booster, the part of the rocket that starts the mission, comes back to Earth, lands on a barge or on Earth, and Rocket Lab is trying to do the same thing. It's a big challenge, and it will be quite important and quite interesting to sort of follow the company's work on that.
And what will the launch market look like as Neutron starts flying?
So SpaceX has been really powerful the last few years, but there's a bunch of companies that are really pushing hard to ramp up their own rockets. Jeff Bezos' space company, Blue Origin, has their own partially reusable vehicle that they've been developing and want to fly more. There's United Launch Alliance, there's Spokespace, there's Firefly Aerospace. And then, of course, there's SpaceX. SpaceX is the sort of dominant incumbent at this point, and many industry executives expect SpaceX to sort of make some changes to what their offering looks like. And it's not exactly clear what that would look like, but the launch market will be changing quite a bit over the next few years as some of these new rockets come online.
That was WSJ Space Business reporter Micah Maidenberg speaking with our Peter Ciampelli. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by me, Julie Chang, with deputy editor Chris Zinsley. We'll be back later this morning with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.